Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Hey, by the way, Adam Talaferro's story is on tonight on BTN. 7 o'clock. And one of those that for Jack and me, frozen in time. Remember him being down in the field, and you knew it was bad. You knew. But I'll tell you when it hit me where I really knew it was bad. I had to go to the game before the team, so I took my bag with me, and I put my bag in the Penn State locker room. And my overnight bag. So I had to go down and get the bag to then get on the bus to leave and go to the airport. And when I went in there, Tom Venturino was on the phone, and Joe's face looked ashen. I thought, oh, man, this is worse than I thought. I thought it was bad, but it was worse than I thought. So, yeah, that'll be all part of it. And they gave him a 3% chance to walk. And here he is today. What a life he's led. All right, play-by-play call of the day. The Patriots shocked the world.
From the right hash with Jake's right knee down. Extends the right hand. Folk in the staggered stance waits. The snap delivers. The placement. Swing of the right leg. Kick is driven to the uprights. Right down the middle. It's good. And the Patriots win it. Nick Folk converts the game winner as time expires on a 30-27 victory.
Bob Soci, the self-proclaimed voice of the Patriots. Bob Soci, the voice of the Patriots. Making that call last night as the Patriots were down 27-17 heading to the fourth quarter and won. The Jets are now 0-9, but let's give the Jets credit. In a lot of ways, they played pretty well last night. All right. When it comes to, we talk a lot about execution, and when it comes to this show, many people are in favor of mine. with that, we bring in Neil Kulong. Neil, welcome. I'm hoping
your execution works just fine. We'll get into it after the show. How's that? I've got some notes. There are some things we can go over. Not many, but you know.
And let's get to suddenly out of nowhere, COVID rears its head with the Steelers. Matthew Stafford went through this last week, still played. Is that essentially the hope of what the Steelers have right now with Roethlisberger?
That would be my guess. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of misinterpretation of what exactly happened. Essentially, with the Steelers, you had Vance McDonald last week. He missed practice or was even limited in practice. I forget which one it was, with what they deemed to be an illness. Now, contrary to popular opinion right now, it is possible for somebody to have one illness that is not COVID-19 and then get COVID-19 later, which really is kind of what the Steelers are representing by the fact that McDonald passed the test that he was given in order to play. He had to take one. He took a test. He played. Then he tested positive. From there, it's a matter of rounding up the people who were around him the most, and Ben Roethlisberger happens to be one of them. He sat next to him on the plane to and from. Ben, as far as we know, and far as what we've been told, we have no reason not to believe this, he has not tested positive for anything. However, being around him for the sake of precaution, the protocol states that players must be removed, placed into quarantine, out of the facility, not around anybody else. that's really what he's doing. But at the same time, Roethlisberger happened to injure both of his knees during the win against Dallas, which is one of the least surprising yet most interesting Roethlisberger footnotes I think we'll have in quite some time. For him to have played the rest of the game after injuring both knees on, I'm guessing, a multitude of hits because he was under fire the entire game. On top of that, for him to have had exposure to COVID-19, there's a lot to take in with that, and I understand. But the idea here, I think, really more than anything, is the fact that he probably wasn't going to practice. And this is a way to not have to report on the status of his knee injuries. Note the plural with that. It is interesting. It seemed like the left one, which was kind of grotesquely bent on that one hit early on in the game, or I should say right before halftime, that looked to be more of the concerning one. He didn't walk he didn't walk pain-free for the rest of the game. He didn't look particularly good for large stretches of the game, but he came on in the second half, even though he looked pretty hobbled. So it makes you wonder if he's going to miss Sunday, if it's not going to be because of his knee. Now, you get into an issue with this now, because if they report him as positive for COVID-19, he's got to miss 2 weeks. If it's going to be because of his knee, it's only one. The reason I say this, just as a reporter, it's going to be a headache to have to determine the difference between one thing or another if Roethlisberger does not play on Sunday, and that the conspiracy theories are going to run wild if they haven't already. So it's going to be a sticky situation, but frankly, anybody who's covered Ben Roethlisberger for 14 years, you know these sorts of things are kind of par for the course, especially over the second half of the year. There's always something kind of interesting as far as an injury report goes. And Mike Tomlin has become adept at playing within the rules, but using those rules to his advantage. He's not going to have to release information about the injury of his quarterback. And that's really where they are sitting now.
Yeah, because I'll give Mason Rudolph credit. The couple plays he was in, there are a series of Steeler fans in my neighborhood that I could tell had the shakes just thinking of last year.
It was pretty bad on a few of them. They didn't exactly ask him to go out and win the Super Bowl, and he didn't really deliver on any of that at all. You have to worry about a quarterback coming in off the bench, being cold, not really loose, and short-stepping his throws and sailing it kind of high. That's what happens when you don't really step into to a pass. He had at least one of those. He might have had another one on top of it. He didn't look particularly sharp, but it's a spattering of plays in a situation he wasn't really supposed to be in. And believe it or not, him hiking the ball ended up resulting in the Steelers getting 3 points through a bizarre set of circumstances. They did manage to score on the drive that he was out there. So, if nothing else, he didn't turn the ball over. He didn't hurt himself. He didn't hurt anybody else. So there are positives to take out of it, just not if you're going to hear that Roethlisberger can't play on Sunday. If it's going to be Rudolph, which it would be, if Ben can't go, even against Cincinnati, that's a tough game. And, yeah, you get the shakes from last season alone. I mean, you might remember Rudolph was benched against Cincinnati in the ultimate tank bowl between the Steelers and the Bengals. The game that featured Duck Hodges, Mason Rudolph, and Ryan Finley under center, which is still to this day the worst quarterback game I've ever seen. So you hope that they're not in for that, and I think both sides have reestablished their quarterback position pretty well from last season.
Yeah. Look, it's something, though, that came up in that game, I thought, and it's now come up two straight weeks for the Steelers. I felt through the first 5-6 games, Minkah Fitzpatrick, who played such a dramatic role in last year's team, had been okay to this point. But the last couple of games, he has come up with some big plays for them, really when they needed it. And I think that's really impressed me, the way he suddenly is brought himself back.
The thing with Fitzpatrick is, I don't want to label him a boom or bust player, but he's going to go for the big play. He's going to be around the ball, and that's going to cost him sometimes, and it's going to make him the hero sometimes. And in Pittsburgh, I think top to bottom, in the 20-plus games that he's played there, he's been the hero far more often than he's been the GOAT. So you've got to be encouraged with that now that they're kind of starting to fall his way. You remember that the big touchdown in the previous week's game that I don't want to say was necessarily Fitzpatrick's fault, but he stopped himself to what he thought was going to be a deflected pass, and he was going to be in position for the takeaway. That ball broke to him this time. Against Dallas, he was in position to make that, you know, kind of the same play, different part of the field, but very similarly, and that's the style of player that's the style of play that Minka has when he's out on the field. He's an all-pro because of that, and he's been the difference maker 2 weeks in a row. He's deflected the last pass in the end zone to take two wins.
Yeah.
So really, if you're looking at him not being aggressive, him not playing the ball as hard as he does, they're 6-2 and in real trouble heading into this game. So you're excited for that part of him, and he's a big part of a pass defense that's been kind of up and down this season. Some of that has to do with the fact that teams are avoiding him, because it's not like the only thing he's doing back there is cherry-picking.
Right.
He's making plays on the ball where the ball is going. He's beating the ball to the player. I think he's played very well. He's had some spotty things here and there, but that's kind of what you get. He's sort of an all-or-nothing guy when he's trying to make a big play. And we've seen him be on the positive side of that more often than the negative to this point in his Steelers career.
Are they running the ball well enough, in your opinion? I mean, it's a lot's gone on Ben's shoulders. I mean, and it would help him to have more of a ground game, obviously.
They have no ground game whatsoever. I mean, to a point where in this game they went for it twice on fourth down and failed miserably both of those times. Short yardage has been an adventure to this point. And it's not for a lack of trying other things. I understand people keep saying you can't just run it up the middle. They're doing a lot of different things to set that up. In many cases, too, what we're seeing is Ben Roethlisberger at least demonstrating that they're in a run-pass option, meaning he's getting the ball, he's taking a look at whether or not he should hand off or throw, and it seems to me, if this is what they're doing, it seems to me it's taking him an exorbitant amount of time to make that decision, and it's killing the success rate of the play. The fourth down give to Connor out of the shotgun at the end of the game, play that you know is designed to seal the win, they're supposed to convert that. It's not a question of kicking the field goal and giving Dallas the ball back. It's very simply, we get a first down here, the game's over. That's right. What we want to do. People yell at them all the time for you know not playing to win. That's them playing to win. Kicking the field goal is not playing to win. The play call in and of itself isn't bad. It was the execution was terrible. It took him 5 seconds to hand the ball off. By that point, yeah, he's got nowhere to go. There are a lot of things that play into that. It's not simply the running back. It's not simply the offensive line. It's not even, heaven help us, the play call itself. There are a lot of things that are going into it. And for me, it's more, I haven't seen to this point there being any reason at all to have an RPO option within their offense. I don't know why they're doing that, or if Ben is just trying to sell it as such. But either way, it's taking them way too long to be able to run a lot of these plays that they're getting zero and negative carries on. And the more of that they're going to do, the less effective the ground game is going to be. We've seen it be fairly effective, right. But in key situations, the short yardage situations, they're terrible. They're not converting well at all. And it's been Roethlisberger and a good young group of receivers making plays on third downs that's kept their offense going to this point. And we saw that run into problems against, you know, a pretty aggressive Dallas defense. I thought they did a good job. They had a good plan. Dallas isn't a good team because their offense is in shambles right now. Their defense has been fairly solid at times this season. We've seen them make plays. We've seen them rush the quarterback. They shouldn't have been able to stop the run as effectively as they did. And that to me is more of a measure of where Pittsburgh is trying to run the ball this season, which has been a disaster.
Yeah, because if Roethlisberger can't go, they'll need it more than ever this weekend.
I think that's safe to say, yeah. I think that really becomes problematic because with Ben in there, they're not able to run. I can't imagine I can't imagine Cincinnati or anybody, the worst team in football, is going to be real afraid of Mason Rudolph throwing the ball over the top on him. I don't think they're going to worry about that. I think they are going to stack up every gap and make sure Pittsburgh is not able to go anywhere. The more three and outs, which is really kind of a Mason Rudolph staple, the more three and outs they get, the better chance you have to win the game. We've seen that more and more out of Pittsburgh with Ben in there, with a healthy Ben in there, with, you know, a full complement of his receivers in there. They're not able to control the game as well, and because of that, we're seeing a lot of things really fall off. Statistically, it's noticeable. They're losing out on downs. The last 2 weeks, they're losing out on a lot of downs in the first half in particular when they've been sluggish to start. If they're not able to run the ball, I think this is going to be a challenge that Mike Tomlin puts on them this week. If they're not able to run the ball now, it's tough sledding. You know, I don't think this is a 16-0 team anyway. I don't think anybody's going to argue with me on that.
Of course
but
not.
This race is long from over. Baltimore is not a bad football team.
No.
They got to play them again, and they're gonna take a loss somewhere. I mean, it's going to happen. It might not be Cincinnati, but Jacksonville plays them very tough. They've got Baltimore after that. Season's long from over for Pittsburgh right now, and they're going to have to fix that running game. It's a significant problem.
My friend, appreciate it very much. As always, brilliant execution by you.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
No need to search high and low for the best holiday bargains. They're easy to find at Sunbury Motors Kia. I want to see you in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia. At Sunbury Motors Kia, all prices are clearly marked with rebates and discounts. See the sticker and know the savings. SMC has 27 2021 Kia Sportages to choose from, and they start at just $23,490. Kia's all-new midsize sedan, the Kia K5, starts at only $23,746, and it's now available in all-wheel drive. And listen to this. Sunbury Motors Kia has 23 of the hot new 2021 Kia Seltos arriving this month. Reserve yours today. This small all-wheel drive crossover starts at $21,793. And remember, every new Kia comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. The best holiday bargains are easy to find at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see dealer or go to Kia.com.
Yeah. Rocking out. What do you think? Meanwhile, back in the corner office, the suit playing air guitar. Huh?
That's a move I haven't seen.
Oh,
that's a
something
new one.
Else. That's why they were doing the new words of 2020. They left out the suit. It's really because it's not just two words, it's one.
Wow.
It's become a signature. He even goes around to places and go, hey, it's the suit. And you know that's happening, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And he eats it up. He does. He eats it up.
He yes, he does.
So I was looking for a restaurant. And, of course, Greg Sharp, the play-by-play voice of Nebraska, who's... He's a great guy. So give me a recommendation. He gives me a recommendation. It's 5 to 8 minutes from the hotel. Perfect. All right. Well, I'll call after the show and get reservations. They aren't even open yet. It's only 3:30 out there. But it's next to the Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts. I have questions.
Is it a steak place?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, it better be. You're not right in the Omaha, Nebraska steak territory.
Well, we're in Lincoln. Yeah, I know. And, you know, we're near Omaha State. You know, we're near Omaha. Omaha's about, if I remember driving it was like 45 minutes away. Something like that. That's where the team's staying. Team's staying in Omaha.
Right.
We are staying in Lincoln, downtown. So, it was my job to set up the hotel. Well, okay. And the flights. Oh, okay. And the rental car. Okay. And it's also my job to set up where we're eating. So, I got that on Friday night. You know, you get a nice, comfortable 5 o'clock. Right. Remember, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock here. Right around dinner time, we all good. Then the next morning, got to get out early. We're on at 9:30
Central Time, 10:30 Eastern, and then the game is at 11 a.m. Central and noon Eastern. That's why I always love the, oh, no, it's an early start. It's 11 a.m. It's like, no. Okay, the game's at noon. What do you think? All of a sudden your body transitions over after one night and goes, oh, my goodness, it's 11 a.m. I don't know about you, Matt. I get used to time zones quickly.
Bother me because I've done that a couple of times before, and we do that technically. We do that every daylight savings. But yeah, when I went to Hawaii for my honeymoon, the 6 hour was a struggle.
Really?
That was a struggle for me and Lisa when we were there for our honeymoon.
Okay.
We were in bed by like 8 o'clock their time, 9 o'clock their time, and up at like 4 a.m. their time. It was. But then, of course, we finally got used to it the final night we were there.
So this was Hawaii?
Correct.
It was 6 hours. I thought it was five.
Nope, it is six.
What island were you on?
Oahu.
We were on Oahu. Wow.
We spent the week in Honolulu and Waikiki.
Oh, that's right, because I forgot.
The Pro Bowl.
You had to go see Aloha Stadium.
That's right.
Which is not that far from Pearl Harbor, actually.
That is correct.
See, for me, if I were to do the touristy thing, I absolutely would go to Pearl Harbor. I absolutely would go to the USS Arizona. That'd actually be number one on my list. Seriously, it would be.
Oh, yeah, it's a must-go.
To go to the USS Arizona? Yeah.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai. Fabulous new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory as well. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. So Alabama and Auburn both are not going to play this weekend. So here's the deal is... COVID now strikes Alabama, LSU, and Texas A&M, Tennessee. I think I said Auburn. My apologies. Alabama, LSU, and Texas A&M, Tennessee have been postponed for this weekend. The SEC made the announcement. The COVID issues are at LSU and at Texas A&M. So not Tennessee or Alabama. So they're going to push them back. I don't have the schedules in front of me, so I don't know what the options are. It seems like December 12th has been a primary move to, but for all we know, I'd have to look at Alabama's schedule. Alabama may be playing Auburn on December 12th. While it's unfortunate to have multiple postponements in the same week, we began the season with the understanding interruptions to the schedule were possible, and we have remained focused on throughout the season on the health of everyone around our programs. We remain vigilant, said Greg Sankey, within our programs and our communities to prevent the spread of the virus and to manage activities that contribute to these interruptions. All right. So let's take a moment here. I just want to take a quick look at Alabama's schedule here. Just in case. Let's see here. I'm wondering on December 12th if they've got Auburn or if that game is the 5th. Alabama football. Let's see. It's stunning they're favored to win all these games. You know what I'm saying? So they don't see. Scores there. More schedule. There we go. Hit it. And Alabama 6-0. They're pretty good.
So the game at LSU, boom, the 21st they play Kentucky. The 28th they play Auburn. The 5th they play Arkansas. So they do have an opening on the 12th. So the game with Auburn is the traditional Thanksgiving weekend. It's in Tuscaloosa on the 28th. They have Kentucky next week in Tuscaloosa, and then they go to Fayetteville on the 5th to take on Arkansas, and they are open on the 12th. This is how the Big Ten was originally scheduled. The Big Ten was originally scheduled with three bye weeks in there, with the third one being scheduled the week before the Big Ten championship game. I thought the schedule was brilliantly crafted considering the situation, and then they scrapped it, as we know. And now it's the 9-games-in-9-week deal. And you feel fortunate that now you're at a week four. You feel fortunate so far. You know, I mean, I know it hasn't turned out right. I'm just talking about you feel fortunate in general that they've had an opportunity to play. Now, it hasn't turned out right. We know that. I went through all that yesterday. I mean, I'm not going to keep being a broken record about it. So,
actually, Steve, I just looked at LSU's schedule.
Do they have to play in the 12th?
They do. They play Florida because that game got postponed.
So Alabama will have one less game then.
They probably won't be able to play. Yeah.
And they won't be able to play it.
Because the SEC title game's the following Saturday, right?
It's the 19th.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the final college football playoff poll is the 20th.
Right.
So they can't play it. All right. So Alabama gets a bye week. Okay. And they're not going to schedule somebody else in there. They're not going to do that. And Alabama doesn't need it either. It doesn't matter. Alabama's done just fine. So far. They can miss games. They're 6-0. They look dominant. All they have to do is just keep winning their rim. Pretty simple. We never did talk because of yesterday. The whole show was spent on me not having a clue about what's going on with what I'm watching with Penn State. But the Bucs-Saints game. Wow.
Yeah, that was stunning.
Could that have been a bigger thud?
I mean, I picked the Saints, but I didn't expect 38-3.
You're the only person that picked the Saints.
That's
because
right.
Everybody on NBC picked the Bucs.
To which the Saints Twitter showed and said, let's look at this again.
They swept them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those deals. I'll use the exact same line where about Penn State Ohio State basketball in 2018. Penn State in 2018 went to Ohio State, won in the last second shot by Tony Carr, went to Penn State, beat them by 24. Then in Madison Square Garden, Josh Reeves backdoor cut, slam dunk, they win. Somebody said, oh, they're so close between the two teams. And I said, look, they beat them three times. At some point, you've got to look at it and say, you know what? They might be better than the other guy. Well, guess what? The Saints have now won at home and won in Tampa. At some point, you got to look at it and say, maybe the Saints are the better team. At least in a head-to-head matchup, they are. Ratings for the week. Pittsburgh's win over Dallas, a 22.7 million viewers. That's up 2% from last year. So that's good. The sixth week out of the last seven where the late half of the doubleheader has drawn at least 22 million viewers. That's good. The rest of the day, a disappointment. The early half of the CBS doubleheader, 10.2 million. Watch the Ravens and the Colts, down 11% from last year's Steelers-Colts game. Steelers make a difference. I mean, they do have a national following. For its single header, Fox nabbed 15.73 million viewers. For the Panthers and Chiefs, Raiders and Rams, but that's down 14% from last year. Sunday night, though, the Saints-Buccaneers clash. I always love when they use the word clash. Was hyped as a meeting between all-time legends Drew Brees and Tom Brady. As it says here, it ended up being a dud. Saints going up 21 within the first 20 minutes of the game, never looking back, 38-3 the final. The game drew 16.88 million viewers, down 23% from the Patriots-Ravens game last year that drew 22.03. Meanwhile, the Patriots game last night with the Jets drew 9.8 million viewers for ESPN. That's down 30% from last year's Cowboys-Giants matchup at 13.98 million, nearly 14 million. Thursday Night Football, Packers and Niners drew 13.168, down 6% from 2019. Now, Week 10 is going to be obviously weird. CBS has the Masters. Fox has the doubleheader. And the interesting part for Fox is that Fox gets the exclusivity on the early window because CBS is carrying the Masters. So the CBS games are all late. The early window is highlighted by the Eagles and the Giants, in which the Giants will win their second consecutive game.
No.
Wow, that blowout the first time convinced you, huh?
It'll be another close, ugly game, probably.
How many miles did you pace during that game?
That's a good question. That was a lot. And I'm sure I'll be doing the same thing.
The early window is highlighted by the Eagles, Giants, Texans, Chiefs, Bucks, Panthers. The Fox National game will be the 49ers and Saints.
Ugh.
Now, CBS actually has an interesting late game after the Masters. CBS has the Bills and the Cardinals. That's, you know, that's interesting. Cardinals are playing pretty well. Bills playing really well. They're 7-2. Fox also has a matchup, the Seahawks and the Rams, in that same window. Prime time. Now, this is actually, to me, it's a pretty good prime time game on Thursday. Colts and Titans. I'm interested to watch that game. The Sunday night game is the Ravens and the Patriots. Once again, repeating, the Sunday night game is the Ravens and the Patriots. I mean, Al Michaels is sitting at home right now in California saying, when do we start flexing games? And Monday night, it is the Vikings and the Bears. And watching the Bears offensively is a real struggle. It's really a struggle. Wow. And I think I just saw that the NFL has approved playoff diversity measure. You're going to love this. Commissioner Roger Goodell said today that owners have approved two measures. One, expanding to a 16-team playoff from 14 this season if future games are lost because of the coronavirus pandemic.
I did see this.
If that happens, there will not be a reseeding for the playoffs. The vote was unanimous. So that's a contingency plan. They're still going for a 14-team playoff, but the contingency is that if there's a problem, they'll go to 16. Okay? Incentives to reward teams with a draft pick compensation, 2 third-round picks if they develop coaches and executives of color. So there you go. I knew you're not in favor of expanding any playoffs.
I'm not a fan of either one of these, to be honest with you.
Well, you just don't like to see extra teams in anywhere. I mean, you got, I mean, you contain a lot of elements of hate. You know, somebody wants to have a chance, and you just don't want to take it. Say, I'm sorry, you get no chance, you're done.
I mean, the NFC should be just proving that point right now. And I even thought that it sounded like last night that the owners were going to improve the reseeding, which would, of course, if you go 1-8, that'd put the Eagles playing the Saints in New Orleans, which, of course, would pretty much end it for the Eagles. But because they didn't, right now, right, the Eagles are scheduled to play Tom Brady and the Bucks.
Right. By the way, did you see, I shouldn't say, did you see, I already knew about this anyway, that Tom Izzo tested positive.
Yes.
But I was talking to the Michigan State people this morning, because they needed to interview me about what was going on here. And they told me about it there. They said, you know, they said they were talking to Tom, and they said, they have no idea. None. He has no idea. He said, I have no idea how I got this. So if he doesn't, if he tests positive again, he's out 10 days. Let's see, Iowa. Defensive back Darren McKinney became the fourth Iowa football player in 2 weeks to leave the program with the intention of transferring. Running back Shadrick Byrd, Yahweh Judy, a linebacker, and receiver Calvin Lockett have all left the team in the last 2 weeks. So we're going to take the same approach they took in the movie Major League. When it comes to their depth chart, just cross them off the list. Okay. And let's see. And the other Iowa story is this. The attorney representing eight black former Iowa football players who alleged racial discrimination during their time with the Hawkeyes, they've withdrawn their demand for a $20 million settlement and told the university that he's going to move forward with the lawsuit. DeMario Solomon Simmons, a civil rights attorney out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, laid out his plan in a letter dated Tuesday to the Iowa Solicitor General and the university's general counsel. On Tuesday, he requested all records from the external review of the alleged racial inequities at Iowa by the Hush Blackwell law firm be released. The request includes all names and contact information for each and every individual interviewed, as well as documents, emails, text messages wherein Hush Blackwell LLP is listed, discussed, or identified between June 1st of this year to the present. He also stated that the players' initial demands in a 21-page letter to the university on October 5th, in addition to $20 million, the players call for the firings of Kirk Ferentz, offensive line coach Brian Ferentz, and athletic director Gary Barta. The university said it would not give in to the demands and that work had already begun to create a more welcoming environment for black athletes. The university in June hired an outside firm to review the culture. The former players have said they were mistreated are Akram Wadley, Aaron Menz, Jonathan Parker, Marcel Jolly, Maurice Fleming, Reggie Spearman, Cavante Martin Manley, and Andre Harris. I'm guessing they withdrew the demand for the $20 million settlement because there's not going to be a settlement, so they just think they can win it straight out in court. All right, we'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Mark Lawrence on drums. It's fabulous, isn't he? Multi-talented.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Soup banging his head against the table. It's great. What? This is all, you know, you get a couple games this weekend. You know, I'll tell you the person I feel for, and I really mean this, and that's Doug Birdsong. Poor Doug has been waiting all year. He hasn't announced a game. I'm going to guess the last time Doug announced a game was end of February, first week of March?
That's correct. It was Bucknell's loss to the eventual champ, Boston U.
Yeah. Semifinals, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And it's probably the last game he's done. You know, no football season, waiting for basketball. And who knows if basketball, we have to go into a start and stop. I mean, you hear the Minnesota governor saying, well, you know, we can give, you know, 10 people for an indoor event. What about Minnesota playing football? How many people are allowed for, what do you say, 10 people for an outdoor event?
Yeah, it sounded like indoor and outdoor.
I mean, what's supposed to be, a 5-on-5 game with a coach? No. Obviously, there has to be some contingencies here, but...
But for right now, the Patriot League announced yesterday and finally made it official. Basketball will start January 2nd, and it's going to be split up into three mini divisions for less travel. And a lot of the games are going to be done Saturday and Sundays.
So I would guess that Bucknell would be like Navy, Colgate, Lehigh Lafayette?
I would say definitely Lehigh Lafayette, Navy. It's hard to say about maybe probably Colgate, but that's probably the furthest they go. And Army too, yeah.
Yeah, Army would be in that mix. Yeah. See, the Big Ten hasn't released its schedule yet. Now I know Penn State's non-conference schedule. I can tell you that the opener is 2 weeks from tomorrow, at the Jordan Center. But you know, obviously, I'm not allowed to say who it's against. But I can tell you the five, four of the five are at home, one's on the road. And we know what the one on the road is. That one I can tell you. It's Virginia Tech in the ACC Challenge. But Mike Krzyzewski was right. They should have allowed all teams to schedule 27 games. Because the multi-team event thing is falling apart left and right. A lot of people are going to the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut for multi-team events. And as my brother was explaining on the show last week, the restrictions got even tighter in Connecticut with a curfew from 10 to 5. 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. Wow. So there you go. Great to have you with us today. Thanks for all the emails. Keep them coming.